Hey, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good morning, everybody. It's July 10th. How you doing? 2018. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. We got a good show on assessment. And we're going to talk about assessment with Tila Watson. And Tila is the Director of Digital Learning at the ESA, the Educational Service Center for Region 11 in Fort Worth, Texas. And she is assisting on a regular basis over 77 school districts and charter schools across the North Texas area dealing with assessment and innovative assessment. Okay, and it's really going to be an interesting show. I just find it astounding. And school districts are enough, but then you have the charter schools on top, and of course, there could be any number of those. She's a busy lady, and we're going to talk about how she works with assessment because all these schools have different kids in them. All right, different socioeconomic patterns, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be a really interesting show, and I've been looking forward to it. A big thank you to my friends who I always tap into when I want to do a show on assessments, and that's the good folks over at FreshGrade, FreshGrade.com. They're always helping me. Thank you, Emma. And, you should check it out. They do digital portfolios. It's a whole new way of looking at assessing students, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, a little bit with Tila, but I just want to say thank you to them. But they should learn more about this. I do a lot of shows on this, and it's good stuff, so check out FreshGrade.com. They tweet over at FreshGrade, by the way. Why not, right? We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We'll tweet it out, as we've done, at EduTalk Radio. You can follow us, find us on Facebook over at EduTalk Radio as well, and also on LinkedIn, same address. We put a direct link out there. We archive everything at the website, okay? So you can just scroll down there and see every show we've ever done. But for the daily look at what we're doing, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook are really good. I also invite you, and Tila, I specifically invite you to go check out our new digital magazine, which is all about accessibility, compliance, and equity in education. It's called Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity in Education. It's over at ACE-ed.org. Just flip through the magazine. You'll love it. You'll read it. You'll learn a lot. The magazine's going to be up there. It's a quarterly. It'll be up there for a few more months. We got a back-to-school issue coming out in September. If you want, we can send the issue right to you. All you have to do is subscribe for free. But you can just go over to the website and check it out whenever you want. Tell your friends about it. ace-ed.org. And I hope I didn't excite Tila so much as she's racing away from the phone, okay, and signing up for her subscription, going over to ace-ed.org. Let's see if she's still there. Tila, are you there?
I'm here.
There you go with that Texas accent. How are you doing today?
We're going to really throw people off today, listening to you and listening to me. It's going to be a brain test on everyone today.
Well, that implies I have some sort of accent. Of course, I do not, okay?
Oh, no, of course not.
never, okay? I love that. People always think when you're talking to someone with a different accent, they have the accent. Okay, they have the accent, right? So it's great. I love that Texas accent. It's sweet as sugar, I got to tell you. Are you a Texas girl? Were you born and raised there?
Born and raised. Born in Amarillo, that area, and moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area because I didn't want to marry a farmer or rancher. And so I was coming to the Metroplex to find a stockbroker, a dentist, and I married a guy who owned a feed and farm and ranch store.
That's
didn't
great.
Get very far from my raisin.
That's great. That's great. I love it, but that's funny. I've never been to Amarillo, okay? Must be pretty nice up there.
Pretty windy.
Never been there. Yeah, pretty what?
Windy, very windy.
Really?
The wind blows relentlessly, and it's like sticking your head in a hot oven. Great people, great place to grow up, but definitely was ready for a change in my 20s.
Wow, I never heard about the constant wind in Amarillo, which sounds like the name of a really good movie. The Constant Wind in Amarillo, starring Tila Watson and Brad Pitt. Right?
I love it.
That's great. I love write the novel. You've already got the title. Everybody's going to buy it, so just write the novel now. Okay, you're in business.
It's a deal.
You got it. All right. Tila, you're Director of Digital Learning. I love this, at the ESA, which I also love ESAs. I think they're the hidden secret in education, if I may. Most people don't even know what the heck they are. So I do, and I'm thrilled, okay, to have you on here today for Region 11. And I mentioned, charter schools are growing, all right? And you have 77 school districts, but every charter school is also its own school district. Okay.
I
just have to ask before we get into this, how have the charter schools affected what you do on a regular basis? That's a great way to start.
That is a great way to start, and it's changed the landscape drastically. We have 77 independent school districts that contain about 585,000 students in those 77 districts. But just this last year, I've also been tasked with serving 66 charter schools, so almost as many charter schools as I have districts, ISDs. Mm-hmm.
And you know what's interesting about it, which is actually – yeah, go ahead, please, continue.
Well,
sorry.
Just that although the needs are similar in many ways, they're also very different. And so we find that we have to really address the unique needs of each and every one of them. You can't really lump them all in together. It really is driven by individual needs, whether it's an ISD or a charter.
It's just amazing. Of course, an ISD can have 5,000, 10,000 students in an independent school district. Okay? And then you've got the specific needs of the charter schools who may or may not be doing things differently. So it really creates a whole different world for that's something I never thought about before, how it affects ESAs, the charter growth of charter schools. And it's just astounding. So let me ask you a silly question to start off with, what you're going to laugh at. So what do you do all day? You're director of digital learning, and your boss did not ask me to ask that question. But seriously, working in a regional service center, the ESA, Educational Service Agency, as the director of digital learning, what are you doing all day? Are you purchasing for them? Let's take a good example of like FreshGrade, okay, who brought me to you. All right. Are you the person responsible for purchasing a digital portfolio system, or are you the person who comes in afterwards and tells everybody how to use it?
Well, my job actually is on that first end. Based on district input, we help them purchase products in mass quantities. We have a lot more buying power at an ESA when I'm bringing together 77 school districts and purchasing something. So we do have FreshGrade as a product that we purchase. We also purchase Canvas Learning Management System for all of our ISDs.
Sure.
And so I do that, but then I lead a team of 35 people who then help them implement and apply and do staff development and job-embedded PD on all of those different kinds of tools that they use.
So you're digital learning, but now with digital learning, okay, not only purchasing, but then you lead the team that helps them all along and works with it. Digital learning needs to be assessed. Okay, now I know, and I've done many shows with my friends, actually mostly a lot of Texas superintendents and folks in Texas via FreshGrade that I've talked to over the course of time. I want to ask this question, right? How does it did you bought the digital portfolio, which I know allows the kids to take charge of their learning. It opens up a door to the parents and for the educators. They're able to see everything. I go on and on about that, but I want to talk about assessment in particular. How does all this help you, okay, work to make better assessment for these children and for the teachers? Hopefully it makes it easier for the teachers.
Absolutely. I certainly say this about Texas. Texas is, you know, we're as proud of being Texans as we are United States citizens in this state. And but each
right.
district in
well
Texas.
Said. Well said for a Texas girl. It was an independent country. It was an independent
it
country
was.
For a while.
And a lot of us still think it is. We still think that.
No, I hadn't noticed that. Really? There's an ego involved there? I have to tell you a funny story, especially since you're in Fort Worth. 1,000 years ago, okay, I went to the Fort Worth, I don't know what county it is, but the county fair, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think it was the county fair. And there was one of those things where you had a sledgehammer and you hit the thing and the bell goes up, you know, and okay? This is the first time I was ever in Texas, as a matter of fact, many, many years ago. And if it went up so far, the line said strong man, okay? And then it went up a little bit further, and it said Atlas, the king of the world. And the very top one, if you actually hit the bell, I'm not making this up, was you're a Texan.
Of course it did.
I still remember that. From like, But I thought it was very funny. I didn't know you guys had an ego. I had no idea about that.
I know it's surprising, but a few of
that's a true story. That's a true story, by the way. I still remember laughing at that when I saw it. Mr. Strongman Atlas, and you're a Texan. Okay, if you hit that bell. So anyway,
well, please, when you reach that pinnacle, yourself a Texan.
There you go. Exactly right. So talk to me then. So you got all these different kids. Talk about this. Just go on with this. You guys are doing a good job down there.
Every district is unique, and they're uniquely serving those students that are in their community. And so districts really have to assess based on what their stakeholders, their parents, their community, their business leaders, their school boards have indicated is important.
Right.
And so for some districts, it's still about that state and national accountability system. But for a growing population of districts, it's about more than just that one test on that one day. And it's a way, they're seeking ways to assess students. Where are they? What's their growth happening? Because assessment should really be about individual student growth. It should really not be a gotcha. It should be about where was I, where am I now, where do I want to be? And so for that growing population of districts, they're seeking ways to effectively measure a student's growth, assess their growth on an individual basis. We talk about personalized learning all across this country. We talk about the need that every child is different and everybody needs something different, and then we assess additionally with one tool. And so I believe what we see districts doing across the Metroplex and across the state is saying that one test isn't enough. It may be one little piece. It's one indicator of how a child might be doing, but there's so much more. And, absolutely strong digital portfolio system can help with that because it allows a student to showcase their work and say, this is what I can do. And they can do that in a variety of formats. They can do it through a video, through an audio recording, through drawing and scanning in, through so many different ways that allow a student to shine and show the growth that they can work throughout a year. And a teacher, a parent, a school board member, a superintendent can see that growth if it is in an e-portfolio system. And so we are seeing districts say, sure, that state accountability is important. Sure, that assessment that we do at the national level is important, but it's just one piece. And for many districts, it's becoming less and less important. It's important. It's still on the list. But these other things that communities are saying, these are important. Future-ready skills are important.
Right.
Where are our kids with those things?
And I remind everybody the future is now. Kids have to be ready now, and they have to be ready for a future that we don't even know what it's going to look like.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's why it's important to keep all these things together. Let me ask you a question. Could you sit in a kind of in a catbird seat, your folks, in terms of assessment? And within your districts, 77 of them, plus the charter schools, I might add again, okay, you've got districts that are of low socioeconomic background. You've got some that are extremely high socioeconomic background. Kids that are just going to go to college in those heavy-duty, big, rich suburban districts where kids who are struggling might have a lot of ESL students. Not that that's not everywhere, but there might be districts that are strictly, ESL students. When you look at this, okay, and this is going to be kind of a dumb question, okay, I'll ask it this way, and I think you'll know what I mean. When a child in that lower socioeconomic class gets an A, is it the same A as you look at it, all right, that the advanced placement kid would get in a really top-notch suburban district where 98% of the kids are going to go to college? You know what I'm saying? Put that in perspective of a digital portfolio, because you've got to assess across different levels, and they're measuring you guys at the ESA that way. That child who works so hard just to get to a fifth grade reading level, does that kid deserve an A, okay, versus the kid who's in advanced placement physics and also gets an A, all right, where kid A is nowhere close to that? So I'm curious about that. How do you work that, and what does the portfolio help them do? Or help you
so,
do it.
Absolutely. Certainly, I struggle with letter and number grades because I think it's so
Yeah, I didn't know how else to ask it. I know you do. Like, we all do. It's ridiculous. I didn't know how else to position the question. You know what I mean.
But certainly, in terms of, I think what we could really reference is the quality of the work and the actual knowledge gained in the work. And do I think that an A in a low socioeconomic kid who's really struggling to hit that fifth grade reading level, is that as good an A as a kid in my suburban school that is going to go to a Harvard or
Harvard.
A Yale?
Going to go to Harvard, yeah.
Absolutely. I do believe that. And I believe that when you look at the meta-analysis of all the research and you start looking at really what are those top factors in improving student achievement and in getting kids to go beyond where they thought they could go, it's all about relationships. So the teacher in that suburban school that's pushing a kid to excel further than they ever thought they could in an AP physics class, if a teacher in a low socioeconomic challenging school is doing that same thing, and it's all about beliefs. We know that the top three factors in improving student achievement, really at the core of that, are beliefs, their relationships and beliefs. So when Hattie says that the teacher estimates of student achievement is the number one factor, meaning do you know your kids? Do you know where they are, how they're doing, and can you push them even further? Can you compel them to learn more? That's the number one factor. It's not a strategy. It's not a cure-all program that's going to fix it. It's the teacher understanding and knowing where their students are and helping them get further than they were when they entered their classroom. And also then collective teacher efficacy. Teachers believing, which sounds so crazy, but teachers believing that they can make a difference and then acting on that by the way they design their learning and the different strategies they do use, that's like in the top three. And that seems so crazy that you'd have to convince teachers that they can make a difference. But when they see in a school, if they're in a school that's a challenging school because of socioeconomic reasons, sometimes they think those other factors, that things they can't control that happen outside the school day, that those are so overwhelming they'll never be able to make a difference. What the research says is, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And you believing you can makes all the difference. The third highest is students self-reporting their grades.
Yeah, students, I was going to ask you about that, so talk about this.
Yeah, involving, you know, that just the students involved in their own work saying, I think I can, this is how well I can do on this. And then, so kind of self-assessing themselves and then working to do better than they thought they could. Those three things, teachers believing that they have, that they can make a difference, knowing your students and being able to estimate where they are with student achievement, and then students self-reporting, three biggest factors in improving student achievement.
And that's what the portfolio helps do, is have the students self-report.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to tell you a crazy story, okay? And this is I'm just going to be curious how this is playing out with your group, all right? I have a friend who teaches reading, remedial reading, at a community college near Detroit. Her name's Amelia Gamel, and she wrote a book called, you're not going to believe this, Help My College Students Can't Read, okay? That's her book, all right? Mm. And it's really fascinating stuff. And she works up near Detroit, Michigan. And the kids that they were getting into their community college were graduated from Detroit public schools with A's and B's. All right? They then went and were accepted, which they should be, at the community college where Amelia teaches. All right? And they got there, and they were reading at a fifth grade level. All right? That's scary stuff. All right? And that's not good. And believe me, Amelia and her team do everything they can to help these kids, and they do save a lot of them and get them through college for real. All right. But my question, okay, is how do we make sure, and I think this works, with a portfolio, we want to give that child confidence, and we also want to give that child the ability to be able to move forward in the world. Is that easier to do? And I think it is, because these kids in Detroit were getting A's and B's just to pass them through the system. There's got to be a better way to measure. And that's what I think you're doing down there when you can see all this in a digital portfolio. You know where I'm going with this. Help me out, Teela.
Yeah, absolutely. When the part of an e-portfolio system, part of using a digital portfolio, is the ability to publish. And we live in a day and age when kids want to be, for lack of a better word, famous. They want to publish. They want the world to see what they are capable of doing.
Well said. Well said. I like that.
And a digital portfolio allows a student in a very positive way to publish their work, to put it out there for whoever they want to see it. So I'm not just creating an assignment for my teacher. I am putting this out in a digital portfolio where potential employer might see it, where my parents will see it, where my classmates might see it. I decide who gets to see it. I have control over that, but I can publish it and I can put it out there. So no, I'm not on YouTube creating a video on YouTube for the world to see. I'm actually taking learning and applying it and putting in this portfolio and showing you what I can do. And we live in that day and age, and I have a high school senior who just graduated and will be heading off to Oklahoma State University
in the
fall.
There you go. Is that your child?
It is.
That's yours. Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks. But
you're welcome.
One of the things he loves is showing off what he's learned. He likes to do that. And so giving them a digital portfolio allows them an opportunity to do that in a really safe, great environment.
And actually, you bring up a point, and you got me thinking about something. You know, some people are just shy. That's all there is to it. They're shy. They don't put their hand up in class.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they may know a lot, but you know what kids are like, and they may be on the outs, and they don't want to put their hand up in class and look like the nerd in class, if I may. I hate to say that, but it's true. All right? Mm-hmm. And the portfolio, I would imagine, removes that shyness factor. I would think. Help me out here again.
Oh, it absolutely does.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That reluctant student who may really want to contribute, but their personality is just never going to allow them to speak up, raise their hand, throw something out there, they can do that in their own quiet way in a digital portfolio where a teacher and their classmates can look at that and say, oh, my gosh, look what they're capable of doing. But you would never have known that in a group setting of 30 or 40 kids in a classroom, because they're not going to raise their hand and ever let you know what they know.
Yeah, because when kids do that, I remember from my own experience, there's social stigmas and all that sort of stuff, which is a shame, but kids are kids, okay? And, it's so good to have a way to do this and get your questions, get your points across to everybody who may see how bright and smart you are. I'm hot on equity these days, like most school districts and most education people are. We're doing the new magazine. I hope you subscribe, ace-ed.org, Teela. I think you'll like it. Go over there today and check it out. Okay, then tell the world. Will you do that for me?
Absolutely, I will.
Ace, you'll love it, ace-ed.org. But my question, a shameless plug, by the way, but I do love this stuff. All right, and I have to ask, we talk a lot about accessibility and equity in education, okay? And literally every company I talk to, every superintendent and person in education, they are all for and stand behind accessibility and equity for everybody. Can you put that in perspective of what you're doing at the ESA with digital portfolios and assessments, the whole idea of equity, so to speak?
Sure. The I think
I know
the
it's
one,
important to you.
It is. Equity is probably the most important thing that we're really talking about it right now. It's certainly a buzzword. It's certainly at the top of our list of this has got to be a priority. Equity and equality.
Yeah.
It has to be in every area, not just assessment, but certainly in assessment, and because we see
sure.
the huge gaps. And so, you know, I think the difference between our high socioeconomic schools and our low is that our low socioeconomic schools, they lack that early exposure to what I call cultural capital. They don't have that. They don't have no one's taking them to the museums. No one's reading to them possibly at home. There's it really starts with that lack of exposure to great vocabulary and experiences. Well, that's where technology. That's why I love leading the digital learning team. Is that through technology. It's not the cure all, but through technology we can provide more equity and equality for our students. If they all have access through digital tools to amazing experiences, then we've leveled that playing field a little bit. And then we can assess with digital tools, and students can be creative and in the way that they want to present what they know in a way that just also levels that field for that equity issue and that equality issue. And it is a way, often our standardized assessments are written in such a way that our kids that have low socioeconomic backgrounds could never answer those questions because they haven't had those experiences.
Right.
Something as
Agreed.
Simple as you know, a word problem, discussing an elaborate birthday party. A lot of our kids have never had a birthday party. And yet we throw this out there, and they're supposed to attach meaning to it and be able to answer questions about it, and they've never had that experience. And it's unfair to try to assess a child who hasn't had those same experiences with word problems that address issues they just never had exposure to.
What a great point. What a great point. Let me swing this a little bit. You have 77. That's a great point. I'm really in touching, by the way. Okay.
Thanks.
And down to earth. You know, you have 77 districts, all the charter schools. And I've always been a big fan of ESAs, educational service agencies, whatever they might call them, wherever you are. All right. Only a couple of states don't have them, and they should. Okay, because there's not only purchasing power, but there's tons of professional development power, et cetera. Do your districts all understand the power of what you folks at Region 11 down there, Fort Worth, okay, bring to the table? Okay, because you do bring professional development, you bring purchasing power, you bring everything to a group. Some may not even be able to afford it, now they can. Okay. How do you make sure that all the districts understand all this, reaching out to them, et cetera, all the time?
So one of the things we do so that they understand the full battery of services that we have available to them is that we have monthly meetings during the school year for different groups. So we bring all of our superintendents in once a month and talk about new initiatives, things that we can help them with. We do that with instructional leaders. We do that with special ed directors. We do that with technology directors, and we bring them to us and we talk to them about and present to them things that we're working on and things we can help them with, not just purchasing. Really, for us, purchasing is it's a large piece, but it's really a small part in the bigger piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of the things that we're doing is we're coaching in districts. We're providing instructional coaches to our rural and small districts that can't afford to put a person in place. I send them a coach every week to work with their teachers throughout the school year. And so those are that job-embedded PD, which we know is extremely effective, way more effective than them coming to sending teachers to us to do a workshop. I put that in air quotes there. But it's way more effective for us to go in, watch them, give them feedback, coach them along. And so that's a great thing that we're doing at ESAs all across the U.S. right now, is trying to help them by coming out to them and providing things for them.
And the reaction, I assume, is absolutely unbelievable to this. I would hope, okay, because would you guys do at ESAs? I say this all the time. And do you know AESA? Are you a member of that?
Yes, sir. The presenting at that conference just coming up.
Well, it's coming up in November, isn't it? Isn't
it? It is.
Yeah. Where is it this year?
It is in Colorado Springs.
Colorado, I knew that. I couldn't think of it. Okay, that's Joan Wade's group, and that's a wonderful group.
Yes.
AESA.us, by the way, in case anybody wants to check out the group of ESAs, which is really, really important stuff. I just think what you guys do is so important, and as I always say whenever an ESA comes on here, it's that hidden part of the world. When I was teaching, which was a long, long time ago, I don't even know if ESAs existed. Okay, I'm talking about the 70s and early 80s. Okay, but it was never mentioned, never a part of, et cetera. And I hope everybody's, well understands the power of this and what's going on. Where do you see it all going in the future, okay, with all this? Okay, and assessment in particular. What do you see happening, Sheila?
I think we're seeing the pendulum swing away from from the emphasis that's been placed on standardized testing. Our kids aren't standardized. We don't expect kids to be standardized.
Well,
and I think what we see happening is more and more communities. It's going to have to take a grassroots effort to reach our legislators to be able to say, We'll keep doing this test that you want us to do, but there's other stuff, and we don't want all of our funding to be focused on this one day of testing for our kids. And kids are about more than that. And so I see that pendulum swinging, and we see grassroots efforts taking place to say we want to assess differently. We want to use digital portfolios to see what our kids are capable of doing and allow them to showcase their very best work. And the growth we can see from September to May in any content area,
mm-hmm.
with any subject, is visible. It's very clear where they started with their writing and where they end. And that's clear for parents and community members and teachers, so that teachers can help guide their paths in a very personalized way to exactly what they need. You don't get that from standardized assessment.
And you know, I hadn't thought of this before, but the way you said it just struck me. You know, you said we don't want people to be standardized, okay? But we used to. When all this was created, the goal was to create kids who would go, and I'll say this nicely, into a factory system, so to speak. No matter what, you got one job, you stayed there for 47 years, you got your gold watch, and you retired, okay? It was a more standardized system, okay? Get work for General Motors, whatever the case may be. All right, and that was our goal, to get kids into that. There was a standardization, hence the need for a standardized test. But the economy is totally different today. Today, and you know this, Tila, it's kind of called a gig economy. Okay, and if you talk to people, okay, kids who are in college, you know, they know they're going to stay at their first job for 5 years, and then they're going to move on and do something else, then branch out on their own, and that's where we get the Bill Gates and the Elon Musks, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so we've got to train kids differently. We don't want them standardized anymore. If everybody thought inside the box, we wouldn't have Bill Gates. All right, it's that simple. All right,
yes.
And so you're right. The world is changing. All right, and that was the way you said it just struck me. We're not standardized anymore. Why the hell are we using standardized tests? Right? Tell the legislators that it's hard in Texas because they only meet once every 2 years. They're brutal down there.
Right. That's the truth.
That's true. The Texas legislature only meets once every 2 years, okay? But there are plenty of others. And your representative and senator are always available to you, by the way. It's good stuff. Tio, you're working wonders down there, you and your team. I got to tell you.
Thank you.
You're doing great.
We love what
I really
we
mean
do,
it.
So.
Well, it comes across. To be quite honest, it comes across. Emma, my good buddy over at Fresh Grade, when she wrote me, she said that Tila hopes to make – I'll read this. Tila hopes to make a difference in the lives of the educators she trains so that they will make a difference in the lives of students they touch, and multiply that times Tila and her entire team and that whole ESA and every other one. Right?
Thank you, Larry. That's great.
Well, Tila, it's the truth. It comes across. Believe me, you're a wonderful educator. We need more just like you. Okay, thank you.
I appreciate
you.
That.
Well, I appreciate you and your Amarillo accent.
Thanks.
The Wind Blows in Amarillo by Tila Watson. I'm telling you, this is a novel.
I love it. And if we can do the screenplay with Brad Pitt, then I say we go for it.
Just go for it. That's it. I was just going to say, go for it. All right, Tila, have a quit your job, move to Hollywood. It's already there. You're already there. Okay, just go do it. Don't quit. I'm only kidding. You're too good at what you do. Thanks, Tila, and good luck with the feed and grain store. Okay.
Thank you so much, Larry. What a pleasure this was.
Well, pleasure to have you here. An honor to have you here. Thank you so much. You have a great day down there. Okay. I know it's hot down there. So enjoy. A little rainy this morning, I heard, but hot. Right.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. That's correct.
Yeah. So enjoy your day. Right, by the way, are you working now or are you off for the summer? You're an ESA
person. I am. We work year round. Summer is some of our busiest time because that's when teachers can be out of their classrooms and they want to learn more.
Wow. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good work. Enjoy the summer and the air conditioning.
Will do. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Tila. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tila Watson, everybody. Okay, she tweets at TeachTRW. Sounds like the name of a company. At TeachTRW, wonderful lady, director of digital learning at the Education Service Center, Region 11, down near Fort Worth, Texas, which is a pretty damn good town. Everybody flies and goes to Dallas. Should check out Fort Worth, the older of the two towns, which is really, really cool. Okay, it's a cool place. And if you hit that barbell thing, you're the Texan. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We will tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio yet again. My name is Larry Jacobs. Check out ace-ed.org, accessibility, compliance, equity, and education. Thanks for listening. You guys have a great summer's day. Thank you.